be with you.
Hey, Steelers, the offense, obviously, Claypool. Do you know what I noticed at Claypool? And let's see what you think. When I watch Claypool in Notre Dame, that looked like a bigger man.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like he's trimmed down, and it's made a big difference for him. Would that be accurate?
I don't know if he's necessarily trimmed down, Steve. I just think he's being asked to use his speed in different ways. I think what we saw at Notre Dame was what, to be quite honest, I expected to translate pretty cleanly to Sundays, which was big man, like you said. Let's use him in those slots and on those formations where he can be exploited in the where he can exploit the middle of the field and use that size to his advantage. I think they've discovered that maybe that combine pro day type 40-yard dash time that wowed everybody has translated, as well as the size and the ability to work in the middle of formations and in the middle of the field. And so I think they've been using that Matt Canada offense with all the sweeps and the motions and everything that comes with it as an opportunity to use him in different ways. He's become a little bit of a Swiss Army knife. He's a red zone target. We know he can go down the field and high point the ball in the end zone or along the sidelines. Yeah. We know he can work in the middle of the field, as you said. You know, we saw that happen on Saturdays. And now we know that he can do a little bit of this, where he takes the ball in motion on a sweep and end around. I just think I was quite honestly surprised that his speed has translated this well to Sunday.
Yeah, it really has. And I also think that the Steelers did a great job utilizing their bye week to throw a few new wrinkles in, like those jet sweeps that they weren't showing before.
Well, it was the first real opportunity to see Matt Canada's fingerprints all over this thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what jumped out to a lot of us watching it, I think, was we saw little tastes of it, you know, the first 3 weeks. This was full on. I mean, to at one point, I think Ben Roethlisberger had to step out from underneath center and kind of wave his hands and call a timeout and say, hey, wait, there's a little too much going on here. He's up to speed with it now, though. I think the offense as a whole, it's putting Roethlisberger in the best possible position to take advantage of the defense. He's gotten better over the years, obviously, as most quarterbacks do, at reading a defense and knowing where he wants to go with the ball once he comes to the line of scrimmage. But these motions, I mean, they motioned Alejandro Villanueva at one point yesterday, their left tackle. They're moving guys all over the place. It's giving him a better read on things. And I think all the diagnoses he needs to make are done before he snaps the ball. And if there's a few things to hash out once the ball is snapped, he's able to do that pretty quickly and get the ball out 1, 2, 3 and not have to go too deep into his progressions or too deep downfield in reading things, because A, the structures of the routes aren't doing that, and B, it's just he's got everything pre-diagnosed before he snaps the ball.
How does Ben Roethlisberger look to you? I mean, does he look the same? Can you see there's a couple little problems, or is it just unnoticeable?
I mean, he's admitted there's still something up with the deep ball, and I think that's the only thing that's missing right now. The decision-making the first 2 or 3 weeks, and he had a couple spots here and there where I thought to myself, why'd he do that? But yesterday was nearly flawless in that regard. He did admit he made a joke about maybe James Bradley made his arm too strong when he put him back together.
Jimmy Bradley, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, which is classic Ben, the joke that the doctors put him back together too well. I don't think that's it. I just think he's got to find some touch and some rapport on some of those deep balls. He had nearly had Ray McLeod on one yesterday. McLeod was just held up in the middle of the route and didn't sort of geared down for a split second. Otherwise, that's a big hitter there. I think it's starting to come around. I think it'll be the last part of his game that we see come around. But I'll be honest. I would be really worried if I'm the Dallas defense in particular, who's got the Steelers coming up in 4 weeks. I'd be worried that by that point, Ben will have hit full throttle. Yeah. And not only will he be making the reads at the line, hitting the quick hitters, you know, whether it's Ebron or Claypool in the middle of the field, Washington or Deontay Johnson, if he stays healthy, on the outside, and Juju all over the place. You know, he's got a multitude of weapons now. And what we've really seen over the course of the first 4 weeks is that he's comfortable using pretty much any of them.
Defense carried the day for the Steelers a year ago. Now you have an offense that can complement the defense. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the level of defense? Now, look, it's a 4-0 level, but how do you feel about the level of defense that the Steelers have been playing so far?
It's been good enough, for lack of a better way to put it. I think we all expected A-plus defense this year. given the way they played last year, the turnovers they were forcing. But when this defense doesn't force turnovers or big splash plays, it downgrades to a B, maybe B-plus defense, depending on what kind of offense it's facing. You know, and next weekend is going to be I pause to say that the Browns are for real quite yet, but they're getting close after what they did to the Colts yesterday. This will be the most legitimate wide receiver threat the Steelers will face all year, maybe outside of the Cowboys. This will be, I mean, if Steven Nelson and Joe Hayden, with the help hopefully of Minkah Fitzpatrick, who has yet to really make a big play this year after so many last year, if they can keep Landry and Beckham in check, then we'll be able to say, okay, they've had some rough spots, but this is still a B-plus, A-level defense. But they're going to have to get to Mayfield to make that happen. They're going to have to cause a couple of turnovers, and certainly more turnovers from the Browns than from the Steelers.
You know what I find interesting? I think that the Browns in the last couple of years, let's just take the last couple of years, because I'll just take the Mayfield part. It looked like they were hoping things would work. Now I watch the Browns, they look like a team that knows what it wants to do, why it wants to do, and then just does it. And I think that's where I've seen the transformation in the Browns. There's not that hoping it's going to work. Hey, great, you know, and they kind of they're on that thin thread of confidence. That doesn't look like they're playing. They actually know, like, they know what they want to do and why they want to do and just do it.
I think it's a combination of growing up, which I think Mayfield's done a little bit of over the last couple of years. I think it's that. I think it's getting more comfortable with the weapons around him, and then also you have an offensive mind who, at least right now, and this is always up for debate in Cleveland as to how long it'll last, but you have an offensive mind who's in charge of everything and being allowed to do his thing. So I think that's the biggest difference, is there's no cacophony of voices. There's no battling for power in the facility, as far as I've heard. This is a very, and it helps when you start 4-1, everybody's happy. Sure. Especially the owner. And if the owner's happy, then he's not going to be wandering around the facility asking for dirt about who's not doing their job, which I know Jimmy Haslam has done in the past in the Browns facility, and it's led to unrest and strife and turmoil. And that doesn't happen when you're 4-1. So as long as things stay calm there, and Baker Mayfield keeps not turning the ball over, they're a threat to make the playoffs.
Any thought on, I think it was, 7,500? But how did people feel about having people in the stands yesterday?
I think it was another step towards normalcy. You know, every step we can take towards normalcy is a good thing. It's not full on 100% normalcy, but I choose to take the positives and look at it in that regard. I choose to say, hey, you know, if we're allowed to have 5,500 in the place, then let's celebrate the fact that we have 5,500. I know Vince Williams, Steelers linebacker, said, as compared to the sea of yellow seats, it felt like there were 60,000 there yesterday, because they were just, they were that used to playing in front of no one, to be quite honest. So it felt good to have people in the building feeding off of that energy just a little bit. I think you could tell early on they did anyway. It's a good thing. It sounds like it went off pretty well without a hitch to this point. And, it should continue against the Browns. And then I'm not sure what the exact number will be. I mean, total building capacity will be the same for Pitt Notre Dame in a couple of weeks. Right. But I'm not sure what that means for the number of tickets they'll sell or anything like that. But it's a step in the right direction.
Out for your afternoon walk? Because usually I get you and you're in your afternoon walk.
Yes. I'm staying a little closer to home. As the boy's getting off the bus here in a moment. Another step closer to normal. All the kids, K through 2, back in school together today in our school district. So
that's nice.
Steps towards normalcy, Steve, which, as you know with me, is it's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. Hey, Chris, thanks so much. It's great to have you.
Yeah, thanks again, Steve. I appreciate it, man. Have a great one.
Good to be with you.
The Eagles found a little bit of offense yesterday. What were your thoughts watching that game?
Oh, it was fun to watch the offense actually put things together. And it was this crazy thing. This kid, Travis Fulgham, they threw him the ball and he caught it. Huh? It was really impressive.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Can you back up on that? Take me through that again.
it was amazing. Over and over again. It was almost like they practiced it.
No.
But all kidding aside, Wentz, I thought, played well, had a couple of picks. One was a timing route that got screwed up, and the other was basically a punt at the end of the game, which you know, just looks bad in the statistics column. I thought he played well. He got the big run from Miles Sanders for the touchdown. Other than that, he was really non-existent. I think he had, it was a 74-yard run. I think he only had like 6 yards on his other 10 carries. You know, but if you want the headline out of this game is, you know, what did I see? It was the first time an Eagles receiver had 10 catches or more and 150 yards or more in a game since Jeremy Maclin back in 2014. So when that's a while ago, especially in today's game, you know, with how wide open it is. So is the kid a flash in the pan? Well, this is two straight games now. He's made big plays in big spots. I think you kind of have to lean on that. Obviously, defenses are going to adjust. But offensively, I thought there was a lot to take out of that game. But then the defense was terrible, and this is what happens to mediocre to bad teams. They get one thing figured out, something else starts taking on water. They you know, plug a cork in this hole, something else starts to leak. And I think that's what you see with this team. I mean, the defense was terrible yesterday. You know, granted, they're playing a Hall of Fame quarterback and a lot of talented skill guys, but it was downright embarrassing on third down. I mean, you know, Ben Roethlisberger was 13 for 13 on third down.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I could do that in the backyard. Like, that's, you know, and they keep getting in these mismatches where you got a guy like Nate Gary chasing a kid who scored 3 touchdowns already. Like, it just doesn't, you know, I know the other team practices too, and they're working to get those mismatches, but my goodness, like, at a certain point, don't you just take two guys and say, follow 11 everywhere he goes, and we'll figure out the rest.
Right. No, exactly.
I
didn't get it, seeing that part of it. But I'll say this about the offense. If I were on the Eagles side going into this, my biggest concern would be, geez, look at Watt, Dupree, Hayward. I thought the offensive line held up pretty well.
Yeah, all things considered, and the injuries they've had, and they lost Lane Johnson at a certain point, the offensive line was pretty good. I think they struggled run blocking, which I think played into a lot of Miles Sanders' problems. But now, for the most part, I think what the potential was, given the, you know, where the offensive line is because of injuries and everything and who they were facing, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, it could have. The defense, I'll say this, this doesn't figure into me as the terms of the final score, but I get concerned when in terms of the officiating of the game. When I'm watching the game early, the deep ball is thrown. Yes, Slay's there, whatever. Maybe there's a little hand fighting, not really egregious, and the ball's thrown out of bounds. It's not even a catchable ball, and they gave it was a pass interference penalty. I thought that was a horrible call.
No, I agree. I think yesterday, you know, was not a good day for the officials. And, you know, specifically for a play like that, you get the feeling the official is looking to throw the flag and just waiting for something to give him the impetus to do it. You know, and that's the thing. I don't know how they're ever going to fix pass interference because they,
I know.
It seems like reviewing it didn't help. Should they go more to the college route and it's a 15-yard penalty instead of a spot foul? I don't know what the answer is other than just,
I don't,
you know, get younger, better officials.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, my issue with that is, it's to me, this is what pass interference is. Did it prevent you from getting a realistic shot at catching the ball?
Right.
If the ball is thrown and there's no way in the planet he's getting to that ball. That ball's out of bounds, right? It's not, it can't be pass interference. You didn't interfere with him from doing anything.
Yeah, and that's where you would hope that somebody that maybe has a better look at it, one of the officials, there'd be more. Yeah, like I feel like a lot in the NFL, once the flag is thrown, for the most part, it is very difficult to. They have a hard time saying, now we screwed up, never mind.
Right.
And
I know.
I think there should be more of that, specifically on stuff like that, that's judgment calls, where maybe somebody has a better look at it. But, you know, there were several calls and non-calls, and I know the game's going a million miles, and they don't. But, you know, it was really bad yesterday, and we seem to say that a lot, but You know, especially the pass interference. It's just such a game changer where a quarterback can just throw the ball up in the air and end up getting, you know, a 40, 50-yard penalty, yard gain based on the opinion of one person. So, right. But I agree with you. It was a terrible call, and it set him up, and it kind of set the tone for the rest of the game.
And again, I'm not saying it has anything to do with the outcome. I just wanted to talk about the call. Sit there and look like that's not catchable.
Right.
Okay. You're not interfering with him from anything. You're interfering with him from being incomplete, which was going to be anyway. All right.
And you would like to see more. I would like to see more accountability as far as like a Monday morning review from the league. Or from a neutral third party reviewing these calls and who got it right, who got it wrong.
What does the Dak Prescott injury do to the NFC East, in your opinion?
It makes it an even worse division. Mm-hmm. I think right prior to that injury, you were looking at Dallas as the best team, talent-wise. I know their defense is terrible. But their ability to score pretty much 35, 40 points on demand means they can probably, over the course of a season, outrun a lot of their defensive problems just by winning shootouts. Now, you don't win Super Bowls that way. Eventually, it comes up to bite you. But especially in this division, you know, Andy Dalton's an NFL quarterback. I mean, he's not a superstar, but this is not somebody they're throwing in there where all of a sudden they're going to average 12 a game.
Yeah. It's not Kyle Allen.
Right. Well, I think one thing with Andy Dalton is we've seen a lot of these games where Dallas is getting down like 40-14 and comes roaring back. I don't think they're going to have that ability anymore to just put up these big, you know, these giant chunk plays. But I mean, Andy Dalton, I think right now he's inheriting a better set of receivers than they had at any point in Cincinnati, top to bottom. I mean, obviously he had Green in Cincinnati, but you know, you're talking, he can go 2, 3, 4 deep here. So I think it hurts. I think it maybe elevates the Eagles to 1A in this division with Dallas. That's not, they're both fatally flawed, but I would be stunned if the winner of the NFC East isn't the Eagles or the Cowboys when it's all said and done.
You are not fatally flawed. We appreciate your time very much.
Always a pleasure, my friend.